Season 2 of Love in Context podcast welcomes you. Get ready for engaging, unscripted conversations with your hosts, Ben and Spencer. Our mission remains unchanged: to explore the Bible through the powerful lens of love.
In this new season, we'll embark on a journey together, unearthing fresh insights and gaining deeper understanding of how we can love God and live out our faith in practical ways.
So let's dive into this season of Love in Context, where love and the context of the Bible intersect to transform our lives.
Welcome back, everyone.
Yeah.
It's been a few weeks.
Yeah. Well, actually, because of the way that I posted them, because I actually haven't posted the other one until like the week before this, for them, it's been multiple weeks at the last episode.
It's been a few weeks for us, though.
It's been a few weeks for us.
Yeah.
They'll notice because I got my hair cut, your beard grew out, you know, all those different things.
Yeah. We're going to be continuing on in Kings and Kingdoms.
Kings and Kingdoms. So Kings and Kingdoms, we're right rounding out to the last two kings. So today we're going to be talking about Herod the Great. So we've now gone from the remnant period. Ahasuerus was the remnant period with Esther in captivity. Like, people are coming back, but some Jews are remaining over in Persia. I was going to say Babylon, but that's not the right place. So now we're coming forward, and we're actually going to be a little bit before Jesus and during the time of Jesus, Herod the Great.
Yep.
So he is going to be between, not great. He's going to be between 73 and 4 BCE. And so, just so you know, like, a lot of who you're going to be, who that Jesus is actually going to be dealing with, is going to be Herod's kids. During the life of Jesus, who, if you can guess, they learned most of their stuff from their dad.
Yep.
And they're not great people either. So the way that Herod's life works is he's a Roman appointed ruler of Judea. So Rome is very similar in Persia in that they're going to go and conquer a ton of places, but they're not going to necessarily be like Nebuchadnezzar, where there's one guy ruling everything. They're going to have people that report back to them, and you say these are specific guidelines of what you're supposed to be doing, right? Now, the difference, of course, between Persia is that Rome actually has like a military presence throughout all these countries, so if something comes up and you disobey Rome, it doesn't end well for you.
Yeah.
And so Herod the Great is placed in here. He's an Edomian, which means that he is an Edomite. And if you remember the Edomites, that is descendants of Esau and traditionally seen as rivals of Israel. And his mother, however, is an Arab. She's Nabataean and was from the Nabataean royal family in the modern-day Jordan. So hence why he's in this position at all, is that his family is actually associated with royalty. Being an Edomite, he kind of views himself as maybe like the real king of Israel because he has ties to Israel, ties to their heritage, and you're going to see that a lot in some of his life.
Yeah.
Now, one of the defining things about Herod the Great is he was incredibly, incredibly wealthy. We've talked about how Israel is at the crossroads of the world, and one of the things that is becoming a real big thing during this time is the spice trade. Right. By the way, that is not a reference to Dune. That is like the spice trade that developed in life. For those of you who have read Dune, we're not talking about some mythical thing you inhale to see the future.
Yeah,
we're talking about like spices that you eat and spices that you do things with.
Yeah.
So Herod just has just an enormous amount of wealth because being at the crossroads of this major trade route in both the Roman and Parthian Empire, he develops his infrastructure, ports, roads, and capitalizes on the trade to increase the amount of trade going through his flagship city called Caesarea Maritima. Sorry, you can tell that I'm really good with these names. And Caesarea becomes like this vital point for Mediterranean trade and generating significant revenue. Now, the other portion, which is what the Israelites are really struggling with, and Spencer can speak a little bit more on, is he's responsible for making sure the people are being taxed and taxed for Rome. And it's not a little bit of tax.
No. So Roman tax was very significant. Roman tax was actually so heavy that it actually taxed farmers and livestock and people who traded livestock out of existence.
Yeah.
Like it was so heavy that when once you paid the tax, you're like, I can't feed my family. And so
I was listening to Brad Gray, and he said there was an estimated 85%
yes
tax when you're looking at all the other taxes that kind of combine.
Yeah, Yeah, it's there's been some debate around that. Some people say closer to 60, some say closer to 85.
Yeah.
But it, regardless, if you're living in a place where they took 60 to 85% of your income,
mm-hmm.
I would have to make a whole lot more money.
Well, and it's not even the way that we think about income, uh-huh. because like if you're a farmer, that's like 85% of your crop or of your herd, right?
Yeah.
If you're a a shepherd, 85% of your herd.
Yeah. So, and on top of that, if you were collecting tax for Rome, you often collected more than that.
Correct.
And kept some for yourself.
Yeah, I was having this conversation with an expert in that field, and they were talking about how people like Herod, who were over in a region, one of the reasons they wanted to pick local people is because the local people have a better idea of what's actually being you know, generated for income.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would actually have bids from the people in that area to try to be the person who's the taxation person in there. And so you actually will see this even under Herod, like in the life of Zacchaeus. He's a chief tax collector in Jericho, right? And so he would have actually bid for that job. And so part of the bid is you bring X amount of dollars in to be the person who collects tax there. Mm-hmm. And then if you bring a bunch of money to do that, what are you going to have to do to the taxes in order to recoup that?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so if you pay a 20% surplus for the area, that place is actually going to have a taxation of over 20% just so that you can recoup your revenue.
Yeah. And then once they recoup their revenue, they're not lowering that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but typically when people get greedy, they just stop as soon as they get what they want.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's that's 100% what they do. But I mean, you know, think of it like a grocery store a little bit. Like when, you know, inflation hits and cost of food goes up, right?
Right.
When inflation goes down, cost of food doesn't drop back down, right?
It rarely does.
It rarely does. It might go down a pinch or a little bit, but it's never going to go back to what it was.
Yeah. Typically, the only way that you end up driving prices down is when you start having competition.
Right.
But in taxation, when you're actually taxing an area, there is no competition.
Exactly.
Right.
So in reality, these people had probably closer to 90%. 90 to 92% of their money being taken, or 90 or their belongings, right? So this tax was huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So not only are you under occupational rule, you have these people that are over you that have conquered you. But also you're getting basically taxed into oblivion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you still have technically enough to live because they don't want to take everything because they want you to then generate more money, but. Mm-hmm. So then you got Herod, who's just benefiting from this, but he's increasing. There's tons of money coming through because of the spice trade, because of Mediterranean trade. So he's doing like these massive projects, which we'll talk about in just a minute. But all this time, you can't like rebel against Herod, because if you rebel against Herod, you're rebelling against Rome, and Rome's going to come after you.
Yep.
Which is one of the reasons why the movement of the Zealots picks up a lot of steam during this time.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Zealots being people who coming from the idea of zeal, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're guerrilla fighters of a sort that are trying to, through assassination and covert ops is what I'm going to call it, overthrow Rome and overthrow the local society. So they'll assassinate Roman soldiers and they'll assassinate people. They would even go after people like Herod. To try to drive a political message and to bring the kingdom of God back into their midst.
Mm-hmm. And we got to talk Roman culture a little bit and how Rome set up their governments a little bit. So like you were saying, Rome would go in and they would find a local leader.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that was because the local leader knew what was going on, stuff like that. But what Rome would do is they'd find that local leader, they'd appoint them. And I think they called them proctas or something like that. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly. But basically, they'd be like, you can govern your community. Now, if you mess this up, we're going to come in and correct this for you, and you're not going to like how we do that.
Right.
Like, that was how Rome rolled. So they're like, we'll give you a very, very short leash.
Yeah.
Right? And so don't mess this up, or we're going to come fix it for you, and which usually resulted in them killing the local leader and appointing someone else. So Rome had little to no grace when it came to local leaders failing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you actually see this, like fast forward, it's a little bit off topic, but you actually see this with Pontius Pilate, where he was actually on thin ice.
Mm-hmm.
And so in his whole trial of Jesus, he's trying to keep his hands clean.
Yeah. Well, not only that, he doesn't want them to rebel.
Yeah.
Because he's like, man, if they rebel, we're going to have to call in the army, and this is not going to be a good situation for me. Like, because Rome will absolutely bring them in and wipe everybody out. Like,
yeah. And if Rome brought the army in to wipe everybody out, they would have blamed that on Pilate and probably executed him.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of political things going on there, too.
So. So there's Rome, like, you read the history books and you're like, okay, Rome started to set up like structured government. Mm-hmm. Yes, but they still had that taste for blood,
mm-hmm.
right? After all, their entertainment was, we're going to put a bunch of slaves, call them gladiators, in an arena. Some are paid, some are slaves.
Yeah.
All right. And they're just going to kill each other, and that's going to be entertainment.
Also, how do you think they'd do against a lion? If we gave somebody a mm-hmm. sword and had them fight a lion, right. What do you think would happen?
Right. So Rome's culture was not one of forgiveness. It was not one of grace. Right. It was not one of, okay, you messed up here. We're going to give you a second chance. Like, if you got a second chance, you were one of the lucky ones. Or you most likely had someone of influence that was related to you or something like that.
Yeah, this is going to be really important next week when we talk about Caesar Augustus, because mm-hmm. we're going to talk about like his Pax Romana, this enforcement of you enforce peace through force.
Yeah.
Right? And it's going to be really important that we understand a lot of those aspects of Rome, mm-hmm. because a lot of the messaging in the Gospels and in the letters mm-hmm. about Jesus is a direct opposition to Rome.
Yeah.
And the way that they govern. Mm-hmm. And yes, the way that life is in general.
Yeah.
But the authors are doing this like almost like double play mm-hmm. on what's going on there.
So knowing those things about Rome, one of the reasons I think it's important to set that up mm-hmm. is because Herod actually played into Roman ideology really well.
Yeah.
So he
figureheaded himself as a Jew.
Yeah.
But he was basically a Roman in every other way.
Yes. The saying about Herod was, it's better to be Herod's dog than his own family,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that is how much Herod cared about himself and how much grace he had.
Yeah.
Right? He was more gracious towards the animals in his life than he was to the people.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about Herod the Great. We're talking about Herod the Horrible.
Well, and some of the Hagar the Horrible is what you're thinking. No. that's the... the old comic book. Other places his wealth came from is actually when he had political enemies.
Yeah.
He would like take them out, loot them, and seize mm-hmm. all their stuff.
Yep.
Right? You come up with a reason that they're not supposed to be there because he's in really good with Rome. Like, he's able to have these conversations, mm-hmm. these backdoor deals, and basically eliminate his political rivals.
Yep.
Right? So he's playing the good boy for Rome. Mm-hmm. And they basically, as long as he keeps the money flowing, which, by the way, like I said, how much money does he have? It's a lot of money. Rome's happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Rome, because they're not a gracious nation, they don't care how he's playing the quote-unquote good boy for them.
Right.
Right? They're like, okay, he's doing what we want. And, oh, by the way, the people who want to take him out, they're becoming less and less.
Yeah.
Because he's handling business from a Roman perspective.
Well, and so, and he tries to kind of buy goodwill. So, like, one of the things that happens mm-hmm. is that Herod the Great, he does build a ton of things. So, one mm-hmm. of the things that he's most famous for is the Second Temple, right, yeah. in Jerusalem. And so, it's probably, if you're thinking of the temple during the time of Jesus, this is actually, yes, this is the one that Herod renovated and continued to build. Now, it is, of course, it's based on the mm-hmm. original. But he does renovation expansion of the one that they built when they came back from captivity, and it included these enormous courtyards, these towering walls, these gold-plated features, and it was so expensive it required years and years of labor and an enormous amount of resources.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in his mind, he's like, well, yeah, I'm taking your money, but look what I did to your temple,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's actually funny because they have this conversation about the temple and with Jesus and his disciples. And he's like, yeah, by the way, not one of these stones is going to be on top of the other.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't think for a second that doesn't have something to do with the way that it was built through Herod.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not talking about the temple itself, but rather what the temple represents.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I talked about his flagship city, Caesarea Maritima. And it's this port city. It rivals every other great city in the Roman Empire, especially on the ports. It had a massive artificial harbor. It had these massive aqueducts. It had a Roman-style theater mm-hmm. and luxurious palaces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was talking to our small group a few months ago, and we were talking about some of these palaces that that Herod built. And so we were talking about the fortress at Masada, mm-hmm. right? And they when they excavated it, like, this is up in the mountains. There's no water source, and there's these massive baths.
Yeah.
And then, like, 2 miles away along this, like, rickety path, right, is where they're getting the water from. And so when they're actually putting water into these baths, like, they're having servants and it's paid people and all sorts that are actually taking this water, and they're trekking it all the way there to the baths. And, of course, you can't just leave the water in there over and over again as people are using it, because otherwise it's going to get gross. Mm-hmm. So they're actually having to replenish and cleanse. And so it's not just rich. It's almost like indulgently rich. Mm-hmm. Like it's like you have a piece of cake, and then you take hot fudge and you pour it over it, mm-hmm. and then you spray whipped cream on top of that, and then you put cherries on top of that, then you cover the whole thing in chocolate again.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not just indulgent. Uh-huh. It's like crazy indulgent. Like, this is the life of Herod.
Uh-huh.
Herod is, like, I'm trying to paint for the picture. He's rich,
uh-huh.
and we don't have anybody in our life nowadays that's like this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we've joked about Jeff Bezos a lot, right? Jeff Bezos got nothing on Herod, mm-hmm. not on the kind of life he had,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of power he had. Because he's got Masada, he's got another fortress called Herodium, he's got another one, Macheras. It served as both military strongholds and palatial retreats. By the way, why do you have so many fortresses? Because he makes a lot of enemies,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't trust his kids.
Yep.
So he's finding lots of places to hide, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much stuff from Herod the Great.
Yeah.
Other things he did is funded the construction of entire cities. One was called Sebaste. It's also found in Samaria. He rebuilt in honor of Augustus Caesar. He also constructed amphitheaters, hippodromes, public buildings to promote Roman culture and win favor for the people. Okay? It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's massive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the impact of his wealth is you have all this economic growth and infrastructure, so a lot of people have work,
mm-hmm.
right? Which also means that during this time, like, the theater is starting to really blossom in Rome and Greek. But because he's building all these things, the theater is becoming an even bigger thing, which is one of the reasons you start seeing Jesus actually making reference to the theater. I'm talking about hypocrites, right?
Yeah.
The upokritas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have, pub conversations about, like, these pubs that have been created that Paul is talking about in his letters.
Yeah.
And all these things we're mentioning on the podcast is because when you're reading these things in the New Testament, they're set in a context.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're very familiar with these because this is where they are.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that Herod the Great had done. They've grown up in these. It's like it's second nature to them.
Yeah.
And so they use these metaphors, and then we read it, and we're like, 2,000 years later, we're like, well, clearly that's what this means, and we have no context.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. One of the things Herod did is he also expanded trade routes in mm-hmm. the local area. You're talking about the port cities,
mm-hmm.
fortresses. So, like, it's also road infrastructure that he built. And so it's really interesting because this time period, you see a lot of between Persians, Romans, and Herod right here, you see a lot of infrastructure being built.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's no coincidence that God picked this time to send Jesus.
Correct.
Right? Because when it came time for the gospel to spread and persecution amongst believers was happening and they retreated and they spread out, guess what? It was easy for them to go huge distances.
Well, and not just spreading out once that happened, but even in the gospel of John, when Jesus is coming during Holy Week,
mm-hmm.
like there are people that are not Jewish that come to Jerusalem because they heard about Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. And he's like, oh, look, the Gentiles are here. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you think about even in the book of Acts, chapter 2, a few years ago, Pastor Nick and I preached this together and I had the best time because we were going through and I was like, everybody heard them in their own language and reading from Acts 2. And I said, hey, Pastor Nick, can you read that? And then it gets into every culture and it's like the Jebusites, the Nevisites, He goes into it and he starts looking. He's like, whoa, that's a lot of names. You know, we're going to skip down to this one right here. but there's these Jews uh-huh. because the Jews have now, to your point, like these trade routes have been built and Herod has put in this infrastructure. And so the Jews are everywhere. But when they come back for the Passover.
Yeah.
And then they stay for Shavuot, which mm-hmm. is 50 days later, which is what we call Pentecost.
Yeah.
And so a lot of this is also bringing, I'm going to call it relative political stability. And yep. I call it relative because it's very stable compared to what they've had, because you go Assyrian, Babylonian, Persian, Roman, Greek, you know, like you're having all these like turnovers of like kings and places. Now you got these countries actually starting to maybe trade and work with each other.
Yeah. So the other thing now is happening, and Herod had a part to play in this, I believe, too, was actually the development of ships and naval warfare a little bit more. Right. There's actually a battle that took place between Rome and was a country in northern Africa. It wasn't Egypt.
It's hard to.
But there is, and that was a deciding naval warfare that actually gave Rome dominion over the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
And
which is not surprising that there would suddenly be a lot more naval battles if you're now trading via seaports. Then you get people who want to steal that stuff. They do it on the water, which then you're going to have send protection to protect these ships.
And so, but what happens when it comes time for the apostles to actually spread the gospel, the journey that Paul was able to make, like from going from Jerusalem to Rome to Crete to Corinth to all these places, right? The journey that he was able to make, he would not have been able to do that 2,000 years ago.
Correct.
Right.
Well, 2,000 years ago now, but in his time, 2,000 years prior. Yeah,
2,000 years prior to his time, right?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been able to do that because simply just the infrastructure and technology wasn't there. And so you have the Lord sending Jesus at a critical time and using these characters in history that a lot of people would say are horrible people.
Yeah.
Right? Like Herod the Great was not a great guy. Xerxes in Persia.
Not great. Like,
not great. Nebuchadnezzar.
Not great.
Not great, right? A lot of the Caesars. Mm-hmm. We could just go down the list.
Yeah.
But not great people.
Even the good Caesars were not great Caesars.
Yeah. Not great people. And the Lord said, okay, but we're going to use this. We're going to lay infrastructure so when it comes time for the gospel to spread like wildfire, that it will.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, and it's one of the reasons that I say in the fullness of time, like when the time was right.
Yeah.
And you think you're like, oh, when is the Messiah coming? When is Messiah coming? And like we have such a finite view because at best we see 100 years of life.
Yeah.
Right. And if you were born in 1500 BC, you're like, oh man, when is Messiah coming?
Yeah.
Right. Like since creation, we've been having this issue with the snake. Right. And we, you know, like this issue of like, are we going to trust God or not? We need Messiah to come and you know, make us a new heart.
Yeah.
Not understanding that 1,500 years from now is the right time. Like it's the fullness of time when it's actually going to be able to feed into the redemption of mankind, not just the Jewish people.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's one of the issues that Jesus keeps running into as he's having these conversations is that they're like, are you going to now restore the kingdom? He's like, well, yeah. It's just not the kingdom you think.
Yeah.
Right? It is. I'm absolutely going to restore the kingdom that we were always trying to build.
Yep.
And it was always about all nations, you know? I think some of the interesting things about Herod's heritage. So I talked about he's Edomitean and his mother is Arab. It's Nabataean. His father, Antipater.
If any of you are expecting child...
Yeah,
right there.
Antipater. That's actually not his name. That's just that is actually his name. Sorry, I said bleh.
What's his
barf? Name? Antipater. Yeah, I could just see him. Harry goes up to his dad. He says Antipater. No, but he's really influential in as an Idumean. He was what was called a. Procurator of Judea under the Roman rule. So that actually, like, both him, his mom came from royalty, his dad was like a political person. So when Herod is born, he's kind of in this special nexus of where to go. But Herod wanted to be like Jewish, but he's only technically like half Jewish, right?
Yep.
And while he was quote unquote practicing by tradition, he was like the very much of the you do these things, but your hearts are really far from me.
Yeah.
Right? Many of the Jews saw him as half Jew and they didn't trust him entirely. But he embraced a lot of the Jewish laws publicly, but also adopted a lot of the Greco-Roman practices. He basically tried to blend them into one thing.
Yeah.
The
that never happens to
correct
with Christianity.
Nope, never happens. Nope. Never, never, never. No one would ever breed nationalistic American identity into Christianity.
That's just called Christianity.
Hopefully, you know, we're being tongue in cheek. If you don't, then you have not been listening to us long enough. One of the things that he did, though, to try to legitimize his rule is he actually married a Hasmonean princess, right? He tried to legitimize his rule, but then she made him angry and he executed her. Mm-hmm. So we get a little bit of Xerxes, his impatient, like, I'm going to make swift decisions without thinking about the repercussions. Mm-hmm. So groups like the Pharisees and the Essenes tended to oppose him. Mm-hmm. Groups like the Sadducees and the Herodians
loved him.
I mean, Herodian, it should be fairly obvious that they would, like, Herodians get their name from the fact that they were very similar to Herod. They just blend the two things together.
Yeah.
Right? So, even though he wanted to be accepted, some of the craziest stuff that, there's some crazy stories about Herod the Great. So, I'm just going to share one of them because I thought this one was super interesting. So, he got, after killing the Hasmonean princess, they're all really upset. He then executed members of the Hasmonean dynasty, including the high priest Erubulus III, which was his wife's brother, mm-hmm. right, whom he viewed as a threat to his rule. And any sages that opposed the Hasmoneans or opposed Herod's appointment, he also mm-hmm. targeted and killed. Mm-hmm. Then, once he got his throne, he went and he took the majority of the members of the Sanhedrin. So we've heard Sanhedrin before. This is the Pharisees, Sadducees that get together, the Jewish ruling council. And he replaces them with individuals loyal to him. So he goes through and just wipes out the Sanhedrin, right?
Yeah.
Not everybody, but like a lot of people. And the Pharisees, known for their, you know, their strict adherence to the law, right? Because they think obedience to the law is going to bring kingdom.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, credit them. That they actually stick to their guns, right? Even if they kind of miss the mark, and Jesus tells them that.
Yep.
Like, they're sticking to their guns. Mm-hmm. They openly criticize him for his Hellenistic practices and his collaboration with Rome, and he retaliates by suppressing Pharisaic leaders and limiting their influence in the Sanhedrin. Mm-hmm. Right? It's one of the reasons that the Pharisees don't have as much influence in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And why when Jesus is in the triangle, he's spending a lot more time with Pharisees than he is with, like, Sadducees.
Yeah.
It also starts to, in your head, why are Sadducees and Pharisees always fighting? Mm-hmm. Why don't they get along? And when they do get along, trouble's brewing.
Uh-huh.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of history there.
Yeah.
He also, we've talked about Shammai and Hillel.
Yeah.
So he specifically targeted their disciples because fearing that they would teach the people to inspire rebellion. Mm-hmm. And then this is the crazy one. So towards the end of his life, he got even more paranoid, which doesn't seem possible,
uh-huh.
right? And he feared that no one would mourn him at his death due to his unpopularity, mm-hmm. which, by the way, if you spend your life like killing people for political reasons, uh-huh. might be the case.
Yeah.
So to ensure his mourning, this is what he did. He took prominent Jewish leaders, elders, and sages, and he imprisoned them at the Hippodrome in Jericho. And these leaders are going to be executed immediately after his death to force public mourning. Okay? Like, this is his plan.
Quality guy.
Like, this is who Herod the Great is. So he's like this wealthy guy, does all these crazy things, doesn't trust his kids. In fact, I think at one point he actually has one of his kids assassinated.
Yep.
And he's like, well, when I die, nobody's going to mourn me because I'm a jerk. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a bunch of people everybody cares about. And when I die, we're going to kill them so that everybody cares. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just pretend like that mourning is for me.
What would have been more effective probably is if he actually repented.
Yeah. Right.
Right. But, he didn't do that. Right. He kind of reminds me of like the random, like multimillionaire type guy who then goes and builds a bunker in the middle of nowhere. And stocks it full of all sorts of firearm and crazy and booby traps his land and stuff like that. And then he's like, well, why don't people like me? It's like,
well, there's
really,
yeah,
really.
There's, I mean,
like people can't talk to you.
Do you want an annotated list or
like, do you want it chronologically, geographically, alphabetically? You know, this is, Herod's just not a great guy.
Yeah.
And,
so I will tell you one of the pieces of that story where he's going to kill the sages that I really love is his wife, Miramine II, because he killed his first wife, right? Mm-hmm. And Salome, who's Herod's sister, after his death, they went in and they defied his final order and released everybody.
Yeah.
And before they could actually be killed, they went in, like when they knew he was dead, but nobody else knew, they went and released everybody.
Uh-huh.
And so by the time like the guards went to actually go fill out the orders, They're already gone.
Yeah.
And God bless those women.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because that is very courageous, because they could have easily lost their lives doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Herod, not a great guy.
Not a great guy.
Not a great guy. But we do need to focus a little bit on which you've talked a little bit about, but how does the life of Herod, how did that actually impact the gospel?
Right. So direct references. First place we see him, Matthew 2,
mm-hmm.
1 through 23. If you have been in church any period of time around yeah. Christmas time, you're probably going to hear this verse. He's the ruler of Judea when Jesus is born. The Magi visit, and he tries to use them to figure out where Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, you know, it's going to be here. And so what does Herod do? Because he's not a good person.
Uh-huh. Kill all the kids.
Yep. All the kids under a certain age. He's all the boys. He's going to kill them under mm-hmm. a certain age. Definitely Herod takes on the role of Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's definitely meant to be this picture of Herod as Pharaoh
uh-huh.
With coming back to the Exodus and Jesus as a second Moses. Like this is a picture you're supposed to see, right? But Herod's not a good man.
So the Herod sending his army to kill all the boys under, I think, his age of two.
Yeah.
It's not the Action Bible, but there was a different comic Bible that came out a long time ago when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And like I was reading through it and I got to that page and I opened it up and it literally like showed like bloody babies in
the
streets.
Oh no.
And I was like, I probably can't find this anymore.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, they did not hold back on this. And I was like 10 or 12
yeah.
when I was looking at this. Like, they did not hold back on this story.
I started reading Action Bible with my son because, yeah. and just so you know kind of where I fall on it, I think the Action Bible is a really helpful tool for you to sit down and read with your kids.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, like, the Action Bible is going to say things in a way that's probably not helpful. I love the people who did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to kind of redirect that in the life of my son.
Yeah.
Right? And just like most of the time when your kids study the Bible, like, you should be there.
Well, it's getting the bullet points of the story, man.
Correct.
That's, like, it's not doing the big nuances.
Yeah.
Or getting into the finer details or the Hebrew or Greek. It's getting the bullet points of, like, these are the characters that were at the story, and here's the rough sketch of what happened.
Yeah. So with the death of all the yeah. kids, you completely understand, one, that Joseph is told to go to Egypt.
Yeah.
But why do they go to Egypt, right? Because Herod's powerful and he'll find you,
mm-hmm.
right? And they head off to Egypt and until Herod is dead,
mm-hmm.
and he's no longer around to be mm-hmm. pursuing them. And then even then, with his kids, they go to Nazareth, which is kind of like nowhere's nowhere.
Yeah,
like what good thing comes from Nazareth? That's what Philip asked, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's because Nazareth is a nowhere town,
mm-hmm.
and they go there on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Being Alaskan and be like, what good thing comes from Fairbanks?
Oh, poor right. Fairbanks.
Yeah.
There's probably a listener from Fairbanks that's like, a lot of good things come from Fairbanks.
I have some good friends up in Fairbanks, and they'll be like, hey.
I was, random rabbit trail because we're talking about what good thing, but we were down in Idaho visiting family, we drove through this town called Buell, Idaho. So if you're listening from Buell, Idaho, hello. And we were on our way to this hot springs. And I was like, man, this town is just tiny and kind of out of the middle of nowhere. And I saw this sign. It was like talking about like trout capital of the world or something. And my wife told me that Buell actually apparently is like where some of the best caviar comes from.
Oh.
This random small town is like where some of the best caviar comes from. It'll say like packaged in Buell, Idaho. And I'm like, well, that's crazy. Like, I would never have thought, like, because you're driving down the city and it's like you
right.
know, it's every small town that you could think of.
Uh-huh.
And like, this is the place where apparently caviar comes from.
Yep.
Like, that's crazy to me.
Yep.
And so let's see. Also in Luke 1:5, it's the setting of John and John the Baptist's birth. It says Herod's reign is mentioned as a historical context during the time of Zechariah and Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
So Herod helps us also, because there's a lot of documentation on Herod the Great.
Yeah.
It helps us also place when these things happened,
yeah.
Which is why they're able to kind of, with John the Baptist and Jesus, they can get down to like a number of years,
mm-hmm.
like 3 or 4 years of
yeah.
when there's debate about, is it, you know, 1 BC, is it 4, you know, like there's some conversation about that, but we're talking about like a 5-year period of time.
Yeah.
Here. Indirectly in the Bible, the Herodian dynasty influencers like his son, Herod Archelaus, was mentioned in Matthew 2:22 as the ruler of Judea after Herod dies, mm-hmm. right? Herod Antipas, his another son, plays a major role in John the Baptist's execution and Jesus' trial. Mm-hmm. So Antipas, by the way, does very similar to his dad, is that he ends up marrying a woman and gets himself into a bad position trying to gain favor, and that's how John ends up with his head on a platter. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of trying to play that fence of like, oh, I'm following Jews and I'm listening to John, but also I don't like what John has to say about uh-huh. me and my
yeah.
relations, right? Yeah. But by and large, the whole thing of Herod, he ends up being the symbol of like earthly power, cruel yeah. and paranoid and opposition to the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, fulfillment of prophecy, it does, like Jeremiah 31:15, Rachel weeping for her children, mm-hmm. right? The flight to Egypt from Hosea 11:1, yep. out of Egypt I called my son. Jesus is this true king of the Jews, whereas Herod tries to be the king of the Jews. Jesus actually is the king of the Jews,
yeah.
right? And even Herod, I believe it's Antipas in Jesus' trial, he calls Jesus the king of the Jews, mm-hmm. right? And people get upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, by the way, that can be confusing with Herod Antipas, Herod Archelaus, and Herod Herod the Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I did put this in here in my notes because I just think it's really cool. So there's a parallel of the Exodus mm-hmm. Narrative versus Herod, and like something that Matthew mm-hmm. and Luke were probably doing a little bit with. In the Exodus narrative, Pharaoh fears the rise of a deliverer, who is Moses. Herod fears the prophecy of the new king, which is Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Then Pharaoh orders the killing of the Hebrew male infants. Herod orders the massacre of the innocents. Moses is miraculously saved. Jesus is miraculously saved. Egypt is a place of refuge and oppression, but Egypt becomes a place of refuge for Jesus,
mm-hmm.
right? God delivers his people through Moses, and then Jesus delivers humanity through his life and mm-hmm. death, burial, and resurrection.
Yeah.
Right? There's this kind of dichotomy going on yeah. there. So one of my first takeaways on the life of Herod and why it matters, right? Because he's a non-Jewish king, half-Jewish king,
mm-hmm.
kind of Jewish king. He's a spicy Jewish king.
Like spicy's like, is that the politically correct way of putting it?
It's definitely not. I think one of the first takeaways, when you look at the life of Herod and Darius, Xerxes, Nebuchadnezzar, the corrupting influence of power,
mm-hmm.
right? What does it do to you as a person, right? Because mm-hmm. his ambition, his desire for wealth and power led to paranoia, cruelty, mass murder. His actions, you know, he killed a bunch of innocent kids. He shows the destructive qualities of polarizing power in your life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if you're not careful, like we've talked about in the past, if you don't have checks and balances and you don't have mm-hmm. accountability, which Herod didn't,
mm-hmm.
like power can absolutely corrupt you.
Yeah.
And it damages the people around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. With the power thing, it doesn't have to corrupt you, though.
Correct.
It's something that you let corrupt you.
Correct.
Because I know a number of people who are very well off,
mm-hmm.
who are very generous people,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, so just because you have power, you have influence, doesn't mean you're a bad person.
I think
sometimes we take stories like this and we twist it that way.
And it's, right.
And you'll actually see later on that a member of Herod's household was actually one of the people who were following Jesus around mm-hmm. and funding his ministry.
Correct. Yeah.
And so... So even throughout all this power corruption and greed and stuff, there was still good things that were happening.
Right.
Right.
Well, and I think in the case of like mm-hmm. Herod and a lot of the people,
yeah.
the way you accumulate your wealth matters.
Yeah.
Right?
Because mm-hmm.
he's accumulating his wealth on the backs of other people mm-hmm. and assassinating political opponents and stuff like that. And then he, you know, when you're very self-focused on all that, like it's not going to stop the more power you get.
No.
Typically, if you are a generous person, if you're given more, you tend to be more generous.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a selfish person and you're given more, you tend to be more selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And it rarely flips.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I was thinking about with Herod, because when you deal with his thing of like, you know, I want to be a Jewish king, I'm going to observe Torah law, but I'm not really going to observe Torah law, mm-hmm. is this danger of hypocrisy where you try to play for the applause of people,
yeah,
right, rather than actually having a life that is centered on relationship, mm-hmm. which is what Christ is calling us to. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do the right thing rather than be with the right person,
mm-hmm.
right? Be in relationship with the right person. And in the case of Herod, he's not doing it because he's trying to be close to God. He's because he's trying to gain the favor of people.
Yep.
Which, I mean, we would never know about in our context ever.
Not at all. I would say the other thing, one of the other takeaways is just be mindful who you surround yourself with.
Mm-hmm.
Like Herod decided to get in bed with Rome,
mm-hmm.
right? And what that led to was him becoming more like Rome,
mm-hmm.
which Rome was a graceless nation.
Right.
Right. It was like, here's your one chance. You mess this up, you're done.
Right.
Type thing. And so, and I'm just going to be really honest. If that's the group of people you're around, you're probably not going to be around them super long. Or if you are, you're going to be changing who you are drastically, and you're going to be burning a lot of bridges in your life. And Herod, as you can see in his story, he burnt so many bridges that when it came time for his death, he's like, I'm going to need to kill some more people so people are actually mourning on the day I die. Mm-hmm. And it's delusional thinking because he's like, we're going to do this so they're mourning for me. And I was like, and it's like,
they're not going to be mourning.
They're not going to be mourning for you. They couldn't give a flying fart about you.
Yeah. Flying fart.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? So like who you surround yourself with is very important.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, there are other stories in the New Testament of these guys who do work for Rome.
Yeah.
Right, you think about the centurion, mm-hmm. when he talks to Jesus and he's worried about a servant,
mm-hmm.
and he says, "No, I know who you are. I know what it's like to be under authority. If you say it's done, it's done." Mm-hmm. And like he just places his faith directly in the authority of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You think about Peter coming to the house of Cornelius,
mm-hmm.
and all the people are talking about it. They're like, "Yeah, he takes good care of us. He cares about our customs and all these different things." And like Peter comes and he's like, he's already a good, like a person who's living into the kingdom. He just doesn't know Jesus yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, like all these people work for Rome.
Yeah.
But they have different reactions on who they're going to be.
Yeah.
Herod starts to look inward and pull for himself. And like to your point, exacerbates chaos, mm-hmm. to try to garner sympathy.
Yeah.
Right. Which is delusional.
Yeah.
Whereas these other people, they're like, how do I take care of the people around me? How do I love the people? Like, even if they're less than me, I care about my servant. I care about the people who serve me, you know?
Yeah.
And like, who are you going to be in when you step into your culture, who are you actually partnering with? Are you partnering with God in the middle of Rome, or are you partnering with Rome and trying to throw God in there as a badge?
Yep.
And that's challenging.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we joked about American Christianity, but are you an American that's a Christian? Or are you a Christian that's also an American?
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are different things.
Yeah.
Because we serve a monarchy, which is King Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everything else is subservient to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that should be, like, if that's you, it's hard.
Yeah.
Just trust.
Yeah. Side note, one of the things that drives me nuts about, like, Christian nationalism in America, when people are like, this is getting a little political, but when... And you can cut this if you want.
Yeah.
But when people are like, well, these are our God-given rights. And I was like, okay, so what about the Christians who live in countries where they, quote-unquote, don't have any of those rights?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I can name lots of countries off the top of my head where Christians are being persecuted heavily, but yet the church is exploding.
Right.
They have none of the freedoms, none of the liberties that we have.
Right. And there has to be a balance between... Yeah. Standing up for justice and what people we believe people are entitled to, like God-given rights. Like we believe that people should not. I believe that people shouldn't be harassed because of the color of their skin.
Yeah,
or because they think differently than I mm-hmm. do. Right? Like those are not reasons that people mm-hmm. should be harassed. And I should stand for that. I was like, but at the same time, if I don't have that, does that compromise my ability to follow Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I just live counter to the culture I live in?
Uh huh.
Right. Like, it's a legitimate question that we do have to deal with on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you going to follow God when it's convenient or because he's God?
Mm-hmm.
That's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to try to trivialize that and be like, oh, it's easy. You just do this. I actually think it's very hard, especially when you have something that's ingrained in you from birth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You grew up in Rome.
Yeah.
The Roman way is the Roman way.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jesus says, well, not quite. In fact, I'm going to get into that next week when we talk about Caesar Augustus.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we got one more week in this series.
And season.
And if you're watching this on YouTube, you're going to tune in next week and you're going to be like, Ben and Spencer look the same.
Exactly the same. That's because we waited 1 week and wore the exact same clothes.
We waited exactly 5 minutes between recording episodes. So that's kind of how it goes. Ben and I, this was what, a year or two ago when we were early on in the podcast. Yeah. We're like, do we need to like bring a change of shirts in between recording back-to-back episodes? I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just, people who are watching, they're going to be like, wait a second.
Well, see, there's also a pretty good chance that even if we did do this a week later, one of us would wear the same shirt.
It's very true.
Because we have a few shirts that we really like that we wear
again. It's very true.
Again.
Lindsay laughs at me because I have 4 of the exact same sweater,
mm-hmm.
same color, everything.
Everything.
Well, I think I'm down to 3. I think one of them like crapped out on me.
Right.
But and she's like, why do you have that? I was like, so I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't have to think about it. Like, I just.
I get it.
Yeah. I was like.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right. Until next week, Caesar Augustus.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope you enjoyed this engaging conversation and gained valuable insights into the powerful message of love within the Bible.
We'd love to hear from you and continue the conversation. Connect with us by sending us your questions, thoughts, and suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. We greatly appreciate your feedback and ideas for future episodes.
Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Don't forget to hit that follow button to stay up to date with the latest episodes and join our growing community.
Thank you for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in the context of today's world.